Throughout the year, Radio Communications Division contributed to discussions on DBS, in particular to international discussions on the multiplexed analog components, MAC, family of transmission standards for DBS, and to discussions on a draft EEC directive on transmission standards for DBS, adopted in November 1986. Radio Communications Division also participated in national and international exchanges on frequencies and standards for high-definition television.
And a tale of caution reported in Studio Week, the April edition. Audio distributors Don Larkin Audio Sales foiled a massive forgery racket last month when it caught one of the perpetrators red-handed, tipped off by Future Music, which had already been duped to the tune of £5,500. The company was alerted by a suspicious phone call requesting equipment worth £14,000. Larkin called the police, who lay in wait for the caller to collect the gear that evening. A young girl turned up in a taxi with a forged Halifax Building Society cheque and was promptly arrested. Larkin says the man who made the deal was very evasive and wouldn't leave his telephone number. I knew something wasn't right, but as he was arriving after 5 o'clock when building societies are closed, there was no way I could verify the cheque. Luton-based Audio Sales was almost the 10th in a line of dealers, distributors who were taken in by the forgers. Other victims include Psycho and Thatched Cottage. The 17-year-old girl was arrested, is taken to Chiswick Police Station where she's been charged with deception and using forged documents. A spokesman for the CID told Studio Week the girl was a runner for a larger organisation. This gang has sent out 30 cheques worth £250,000. However, we're still at the beginning of our inquiries, he said.
Innovative information-based radio. 6220 daytime, 1611 nighttime. This is Radio Facts, the trade station. Number 1, High Ash Farm, K-Store St. Edmund, England, NR148RH. Interested in improving AM reception? We will be producing a high-performance synchronous detector circuit board, which is designed to greatly improve reception quality of weak or selectively fading AM signals. The board is designed to accept the 455 kHz IF input at any level, so it will suit most communications receivers. There are two selector switches. The first sets the phase lock loop bandwidth, wide, medium or narrow. Where signals are fading rapidly and the carrier phase changes quickly, or where the carrier is phase modulated with data, as on the various long wave services, then the wider loop characteristics must be used. The second switch has six positions. Position 1 is a low distortion envelope detector. Position 2 is normal double sideband synchronous detection. Position 3 gives upper sideband, and position 4 gives lower sideband. Position 5 is called stereo spread and gives fascinating effects with upper sideband on the left and lower sideband on the right. Position 6 is also unique in giving quadrature, which means that the modulation from the strongest station on the channel is nulled out, so any station beneath can be heard more clearly. Synchronous reception reduces the distortion experienced with a selectively fading signal, but does not help with the objectionable surging in audio level. The final unique feature then of this board is that it includes a broadcast quality audio limiter with multiple time constants, which controls the peak audio level. Of course, another benefit of synchronous reception is the signal-to-noise improvement, which results from rejection of noise and interference not in phase with the received signal carrier. The production board will not be ready until July and will be around £150. But if you would like to be on the mailing list for details, send along 1 13-pence British stamp or 1 international reply coupon to Radio Facts, Number 1, High Ash Farm, K-Store St. Edmund, England, NR148RH.
In the Independent, there's a report on the monopolies inquiry into TV union. The government announced an unexpected monopolies commission inquiry into restrictive labour practices in the television and film industry. It is the first time that industrial agreements have been referred to the commission for such an investigation, and Mr. Fowler, the Secretary of State for Employment, made it clear that he was keen others would follow. He also indicated that if abuses were unearthed, further employment legislation could follow. If the discounting of calls is particularly fierce, long and medium term estimates will fall, and so will Rakel's shares, which at a current premium rate of 221p are on a prospective multiple of 15.9, shareholders should tread warily. That's the view and opinion of Tom Kite from The Independent, Monday 28th of March.
We're on the air to demonstrate the kind of service we will be providing every day of the week, starting during the summer. What we are seeking is a license to transmit from the United Kingdom, instead of hiring transmission facilities abroad. If you would like our specially printed QSL card, please send 50 pence in British stamps or 3 international reply coupons to Radio Facts, number 1, High Ash Farm, K-Store St. Edmund, England, NR148RH. And don't forget that every letter we receive helps our application for a license to transmit from England. From Electronic Times, Fields Unite for First Digital Mobile Phone by Mick McLean. The Libera second-generation cordless telephone, launched on Tuesday, brings together advanced technologies from the fields of radio, application-specific circuits, microprocessors and software.
And a report that indicates that perhaps that times do not change that much is a headline for a newspaper entitled Lobbyists for Local Radio Fail to See PNG. It reads, the chances of the Postmaster General, Mr. Wedgwood Benn, accepting the ideas of the Local Radio Association for Commercial Local Broadcasting were, the Association Secretary Mr. John Gorst agreed yesterday, not very bright. Nothing that emerged in the hour's talking he did at yesterday's press conference went to contradict this pessimistic appraisal, starting with the declaration that the 100 members of the association were not tycoons, but tycoons, ruthlessly lobbying in pursuit of vast profits. Mr. Gorst drove home this point later by admitting that after 2 years' existence, the association had still not succeeded in getting to see the Postmaster General. The lobbying continued, however. Yesterday, the association's second memorandum on local broadcasting was distributed to all backbench MPs. This repeats and amplifies the arguments for an advertisement finance system of independent local stations and also sets out a frequency plan for 276 local broadcasting stations within the United Kingdom. Mr. Wedgwood Benn has already seen the memorandum and sent back the message that the arguments it contains will be considered, but he doesn't think a meeting would be useful at the present stage. Mr. Gorst agreed that the opposition to commercial local radio was widespread. The BBC wanted to preserve its monopoly, the independent television companies didn't want further competition, and that there was the prejudice of the culture vultures, the academics. There was as yet no public clamour for local radio, but there was a need. Well, that was written, believe it or not, in the Guardian newspaper on the 9th June, 1966.
Thank you.
22220 daytime, 1611 nighttime. This is Radio Fact, the trade station. Number 1, High Ash Farm, Caistor, St. Edmund, England, NR148RH.
Colin Walters, Managing Director of Manchester's Piccadilly Radio, temporarily joined the editorial staff of The Guardian earlier this week in an article entitled Cinderellas of the Air. With a skill born of decades of political manoeuvring, the BBC has gained the initiative in the long-running debate on radio development. In the spring, the government published a green paper on radio, which seemed to indicate an increasingly substantial future for the commercial operators. They, in turn, responded warmly and felt their fate under an enterprise-oriented government was secure. But now the BBC is coming up with a range of imaginative plans for its radio services that have been skillfully devised to conform neatly with forward government thinking, while allowing the corporation to retain its dominant position in the medium. With alacrity, the BBC has leapt in to support the government's tentative thoughts on single-frequency radio. After decades of BBC simulcasting, the transmission of the same service on both medium wave and VHF, the practice is now condemned as wasteful. It is to be stopped. Conveniently, its end will allow the BBC to increase its national channels from 4 to 6. It plans to run radios 1, 2, 3 and 4 on VHF only, but create a spot in its sport and education network on 1 AM frequency and a public affairs network where Radio 4 is now on long wave. The distress that will be suffered by devoted medium wave BBC listeners who, without a VHF radio, will be unable to find their favourites is predictable. Of course, the BBC reckons that most dispossessed listeners will simply buy new VHF sets and become more sophisticated in their listening habits. If they're right, the corporation with its ingenious reorganisation could secure its domination of radio for a decade or more. There are no signs of any reaction from the commercial operators. Maybe their recently relaxed posture results from the almost unprecedented prosperity they currently enjoy. The industry, which a year ago felt itself the Cinderella of the media world, poor and unloved, has been feeling decidedly chipper. This view is almost certainly misguided and complacent. The government, having perhaps for the first time in a decade put some real intellectual sweat into exploring policy for radio, is once again preoccupied with TV and the challenges it offers. In the Home Office, a new Minister of State needs to be convinced that radio matters to many millions of voters, that commercially funded radio can thrive in a deregulated setting and can provide a vigorous service totally relevant to the needs of the 90s and not trapped by the ethos of either Reef or Radio Caroline.
From The Nation, Thailand's independent newspaper. Legitimate users of radio transceivers need help. The crackdown on the illegal use of radio transceivers initiated by Government House last week is widely believed to be politically motivated. Aides to the Premier felt that it was time to do some house cleaning to get rid of people who have taken undue advantage of the Premier's generosity and tolerance. It is an open secret that a growing number of people are illegally using the transceivers. Authorities say more than 90% of people using this modern walkie-talkie radios bought the equipment in the black market and used them without a proper permit. The transceiver is a preferred means of communication because it is much more handy and efficient than a telephone. It is also much cheaper than any portable cellular radio phone. A large number of people, including police officers, public disaster relief volunteers and members of the mass media, use the transceivers for legitimate purposes. Unfortunately, many people who have no legitimate need for the transceivers also acquired the equipment to show it off to impress people around them. Thus, we often see people carrying their transceivers into supermarkets, food shops and department stores and intentionally leaving the switch on. The intermittent crackling radio message attracts attention of passers-by who tend to think that people carrying the equipment must either be senior police officers or government officials. The transceivers became a status symbol of the show-offs. Many paid a fee to be members of a foundation on the promotion of Thai culture, which was based in Government House. They received a membership card issued by an aide to the chief advisor of the Premier, authorising them to operate transceivers via a radio network of the Foundation. The radio network has since been closed, and the aide to the chief advisor was barred from entering Government House. Perhaps those most seriously affected in the crackdown are public disaster relief volunteers of private charity foundations, such as the Poor Tek Tung and Ruam Kantanyu. Volunteers from these two foundations have virtually replaced the police in picking up bodies of accident and murder victims and sending injured people to hospital. They are also instrumental in helping the fire brigade put out small fires in crowded neighbourhoods inaccessible to large fire engines. These volunteers, like members of the mass media and police officers, used to rely on news coming to them on the transceivers. Without the equipment, these people are virtually cut off. The Post and Telegraph Department does make provision for people who have legitimate need to apply for permission to use the transceivers, but many still find some of the conditions set by the department unacceptable. For example, all transceivers must be handed over to the department as government property. Those bought in the black market would not be accepted. A monthly user fee is levied. The transceivers must be fixed to receive only a few frequencies. Those having the capability to scan for communication on various frequencies are banned because they can be used in eavesdropping on communications of the police and other government agencies. And indeed, many did just that. The crackdown may have been well intended, but it inadvertently opened a Pandora's box. We hope the government will relax the conditions in applying for permission to use the transceivers, because many people do need the equipment for legitimate purposes. The police department, for example, is planning to ask the government to legalise the use of transceivers by its police officers. Meanwhile, the police and firemen will likely have to work harder because not many volunteers would be able to go to their help in time. That's from The Nation, Thailand's independent newspaper. Broadcasting to the European Community, 6220 daytime, 1611 nighttime. This is Radio Facts, the trade station. Number 1, High Ash Farm, K-Store St. Edmund, England, NR14-8RH.
In the time of the clip, Maggie Brown reported that Carlton and Virgin are to bid for a national radio franchise. Two of Britain's fastest expanding media companies, Carlton Communications and Virgin, are planning to bid for the first of three franchises to run Britain's new national commercial radio station. This follows a go-ahead by Douglas Hurd, the Home Secretary, on Tuesday. Michael Green, head of Carlton Communications, said, "I'm very interested. Radio is an incredibly cheap way of reaching people in terms of the cost of programming and equipment. We're looking at either bidding by ourselves or going in with someone else. It should be a perfectly viable business." Robert Devereux, the chairman of Virgin Television, a subsidiary of Virgin Group, said we're definitely bidding. We've always thought radio was a local extension for us. The group would not necessarily wish to devise a pure music channel, however, and it is looking at information programmes as well. We've recently bought stakes in two independent local radio stations, Radio Mercury and Radio Piccadilly, to learn about the business, added Mr. Devereux. While the costs involved remain a mystery, the pricing method of the new quasi-monopoly rights to broadcast and raise advertising in three new national channels is seen as crucial. Mr. Devereux said, our business plan will look at what is spent by advertisers in the market and see if we can calculate our share of national advertising. Programming costs are much easier to assess. Brown Maddox, media assistant at Kynewalt Grayson, said, the value would be low, despite the attraction of holding a national radio advertising franchise for the first time, and the Home Secretary's commitment to introduce the three in a sequence. She added, if they are really going for three new channels, there will be very little money around. She expects existing commercial radio stations to be badly squeezed, with about 10 out of the 46 stations either going under or being bought out once the explosion begins in 1990. Miss Maddox said the Australian Paul Ramsay Group, which invested heavily in local radio during 1986, was trying to sell up, including its 25% stake in Capital Radio. Nigel Walmsley, Managing Director of Capital Radio, said the Home Secretary's decision to look for diverse programming was quirky. He said Capital, whose IBA contract for London runs until 1992, thought a franchise would be worthwhile and was very interested, and he would seek an involvement.
This next report from Roger Tate.
Audio News, presented by Roger Tate. And Bertha headlines. Yamaha are to release a new range of cassette decks. Ariston are to release a new amplifier. News from Partington Stands, Revox and the BBC. Lasky's are to support digital audio tape. As predicted widely, Yamaha have recently released several new cassette decks. The popular K340 has been replaced by a new model called the KX300, priced at around £149 in the UK, whilst the K540 is now superseded by the KX500 at £209. Both of these models feature Dolby HX Pro, as well as logic control, manual fine bias, and an optional infrared remote. One rather unusual facility is playback trim, a control that gives a small amount of treble lift to improve tapes made on decks where bias or azimuth were out of adjustment. More on this when we run a full review. The Scottish turntable manufacturer Ariston have surprised the hi-fi trade with the unveiling of their first integrated amplifier. Initially, it's going to be called the Pulsar. The new amplifier is described as being a freshly styled unit, sporting a black Perspex fascia and a high-tech look. Rated at 40 watts per channel, the real surprise is that the amplifier comes complete with an infrared remote and is expected to sell at a remarkably low price, around £175. Facilities include tone controls, video auxiliary inputs, moving magnet and moving coil record deck inputs, as well as inputs for CD and tape. Partington loudspeaker stands have just announced a new Dreadnought stand, made of heavy steel and standing some 38 centimetres tall. Now, these heavy stands are supplied with floor spikes, top spikes being an optional extra. The stands can easily be filled with sand, and Partington are offering the Dreadnoughts filled with a mixture of lead, sand, and resin. Now, when carried into our studio by a friend of mine, the comment was, heavy, man. Priced at £129 filled, I would say these stands are certainly for the weightlifting hi-fi buff. And now a couple of rather short items. News now from Revox. Revox have just published a lavish 40-page colour booklet to commemorate the firm's 40th anniversary. If you'd like a free copy, then drop David Wood a line at the British Importers, who are FWO Bausch Limited, 49 Theobald Street, Boreham Wood, Hertfordshire, in the United Kingdom. News now from the British Broadcasting Corporation. The BBC have completed their work on the RDS, Radio Data System Network, ahead of schedule. The central RDS computer should go online next month, with the official launch of RDS being later this year. And our final item, Laskys are to support digital audio tape. Laskys looks set to be the first high street retailer to stock DAT machines and pre-recorded tapes. The Laskys Hi-Fi chain have acquired 12 special display units and a limited selection of DAT titles from the German label Grossmeister. It appears that DAT will at first be restricted to 12 of Laskys' top outlets, who will be able to offer 10 titles, retailing at £14.99. Meanwhile, both Sony and Technics are refusing to announce a firm release date for DAT machines in the UK. This has been Audio News with Roger Tate.
I think this will change. I think as engineers become producers especially, and as people become much more aware of the technology and hopefully that they use the radiophonic workshop and use all the equipment in their studios, the dramatists can see that this equipment can free them and can make radio the best imaginative medium as opposed to the runner-up to television.
Do you think the technology doesn't yet do that you want it to do?
I think it's very hard to imagine what the technology can do until you've seen the new bit of technology. But every time a new thing comes out, I just think, God, the possibilities of this.
Peter Simmons there, ending Sounds Possible, a report by David Roper on the technology of sound. The Dream will be broadcast on Radio 1 on Easter Day. And that was from Radio 4's Kaleidoscope programme this week. This is Radio Facts, 6220 daytime, 1611 nighttime. Radio Facts, the trade station, number 1, High Ash Farm, Caistor, St. Edmund, England, NR14 8RH.